Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly, the films Blue Moon, After the Hunt, and Mr. Scorsese.
Well, I'm not going to sing Blue Moon today, but I'm going to talk about a movie, which is called Blue Moon. It's the new movie, one of the new movies, by Richard Linklater. He actually has two new films opening this season, and Blue Moon is the first one to reach regular movie screens. And it's an interesting movie. It's Richard Linklater. He's a very fine filmmaker. He's done some terrific work over the years. But like most filmmakers, he makes major films and he makes minor films. I would call this one of the minor ones, but it's certainly an interesting movie, and I was very absorbed in it from beginning to end. So Blue Moon is named after a song, and the lyrics to that song were written by Lawrence Hart, one of the most fabulously successful songwriters, lyricists, of all time. I mean, just to name a few of the songs that he wrote the words for, My Funny Valentine, The Lady is a Tramp, Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered. And according to this film, Blue Moon was one of his least favorites. He didn't much like it, even though he wrote those terrific lyrics. I've always loved that song. But anyway, that's the song the movie is named after, and it is very much about Lawrence Hart. But it is not about Lawrence Hart at the top of his game when he was writing all his fabulous songs and writing shows and all of that. You know, again, he did the words. He worked for many, many years with the great, great, great Richard Rodgers, who was an extremely major composer of songs and shows. So they had worked together for many years. However, when this film takes place, and this film takes place over one single night, Rodgers has just worked with Oscar Hammerstein II on a new musical, namely Oklahoma, a hugely popular musical. It was hugely popular on Broadway. It was very unconventional in certain respects because it barely even had a story, but it really changed the American stage musical, and then it became a very successful movie. So Oklahoma was a very, very big deal. And the movie Blue Moon takes place on one night in 1943, and it is the opening night on Broadway of Oklahoma. So here we have Lawrence Hart, who worked with the composer of Oklahoma for years and years, but did not write this show, and he's kind of depressed. He was at the opening night. Everybody can tell this show is going to be a gigantic hit, but now Lawrence Hart has slunk out of the theater, and he's gone to Sardi's, which is a fabulously famous restaurant in the New York Theater District, and he doesn't want to have any drinks because he's a total alcoholic. And in fact, the first thing we see in the movie is him collapsing in an alleyway. Now he's inside Sardi's, but he's trying not to drink, but he doesn't quite succeed in that, and he does have a few drinks, but mainly he is depressed and upset because this huge, gigantic show, which he did not write, even though he worked with that composer for years and years, has just opened, and it's obviously going to be a big hit. So what we have in this movie is poor Lawrence Hart at Sardi's, trying to be cheerful, trying to connect with all these people, his colleagues, his friends, all the people he's been around for years and years. But everybody knows that this is not a good night for him. And he certainly knows that this is not a good night for him. So that's what goes on here. And we see him have conversations, largely with the bartender, who is played by Bobby Cannavale, a wonderful performer. I would say most of the movie is conversations between Lawrence Hart and the bartender. Also, Richard Rodgers, the composer, eventually shows up, played by the wonderful Andrew Scott. And then a woman is there also, played by Margaret Qualley. And she is also, she's based on a real-life person. And she is somebody whom Lawrence Hart, who appears as bisexual, obviously known for being gay, but who is obviously really infatuated with this woman and would love to have sex with this woman, he has conversations with her as well. So this movie, yes, it is talk, 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 but it's very inventively filmed. And the main performance, I haven't even mentioned him yet, is Ethan Hawke as Lawrence Hart. And he's a terrific actor, and he gives a wonderful, wonderful performance in this movie. So again, I got to emphasize, this is a movie which is largely about talk. It's about talking with the bartender. It's about talking about the woman who you have your eyes on at the moment. And it's not talking with, he eventually talks with Oscar Hammerstein II, his great rival in the world of Broadway musicals. And he talks with a few other people as well along the way, and all the time trying to keep up this facade that he is cheerful and he's happy and, oh, isn't it wonderful for everybody? And he's going to be back in the game soon. He has this wonderful idea for a new show, which he talks about with Richard Rodgers, but Richard Rodgers is very skeptical about it. Anyway, that's what happens. And then at the very end of the movie, we discover that, if you didn't already know it, that Lawrence Hart died before he turned 50. His alcoholism just did him in. So that's what the movie's about. But it's not a downbeat movie. It's a movie with a lot of sadness in it, a movie with a lot of unhappiness in it, but it's also a movie with a lot of dialogue in it. It's very, very talk-driven, and that alone is very refreshing in this day and age. I had a good time watching Blue Movie. Again, it's not a major Richard Linklater film, but it's a very good Richard Linklater film, and I heartily recommend it. And if you have any interest in American theater or American musicals or American music for that matter, then it's a movie not to miss. Next of all, the big controversial movie of the moment, which is After the Hunt. This is a new movie by a very good filmmaker, Luca Guadagnino, written by Nora Garrett, and it's a movie that takes on pretty controversial subject matter, and it has generated, as I said, quite a lot of controversy. This is a movie about the academic world. So we had the world of the Broadway musical, the American stage, and Blue Moon. Now here we have a movie which takes place at Yale. And my gosh, it certainly looks like Yale to me, but the movie was filmed in London, so go figure that. And we have academic intrigue going on. So here's what happens. Our main character, played by Julia Roberts, wonderful singer in a really good, solid, challenging role like this, she is a philosophy professor. And she has a student, played by Ayo Edebiri, who is a PhD student. She's writing her dissertation. And she accuses another philosophy professor, played by Andrew Garfield, of having sexually assaulted her. So this is very, very major stuff. Okay, very, very bad stuff. Something is going on here for sure. And it was at the Julia Roberts character's apartment. It was at her home after a party when the graduate student, whose name is Maggie, and the other philosophy professor, whose name is Hank, left, and they left together, and they seemed to be having just a nice little conversation with each other. But then, yep, now Maggie, the young PhD student, she is back, and she is accusing Hank of having sexually assaulted her. We didn't see this. We can't tell what really happened, but there's no reason apparently not to believe Maggie. Now, the thing is that our main character, the Julia Roberts character, her name is Alma, she is very close to Hank, and she is very close to her graduate student. So she is sort of caught in the middle of this. Another character is the husband of Alma, the philosophy professor, her husband played by the wonderful Michael Stuhlbarg, who is a psychoanalyst. And he is sort of observing and watching and occasionally commenting. And he himself seems to be kind of a jerk. So it's an interesting secondary character, but he's still a very important character. And other things are going on here, too. For example, our two philosophy professors, Alma and Hank, are both up for tenure. They're of different, we'll say different generations, but their age is quite different. Alma, we find out, was away from academia for a while. We're never told why. So that's why she's up for tenure at the same time as the younger Hank. So all of this is going on. And then during the course of the film, we find out that apparently there was some troubling sexual assault incident that Alma suffered way back in her past. And we find out about that little tiny bits here and there over the whole movie. And that's also going on in all of this. So this is obviously all about questions of sexual assault, questions of sexual impropriety, the question of whether to believe accusations when they are made, the question of who's a victim and who might be a victim, and this sort of thing. All these very hot-button current-day issues are very much addressed in very direct ways in this film. However, I would argue not direct enough. The movie puts all these hot-button issues right up there on the screen, but it hedges its bets in so many ways. It leaves so many things vague. We never find out exactly what it was that happened to Alma years ago. It's true that Maggie, the graduate student, she appears to be a very good student to us, as far as we can tell from much of the film. She's black, which gives her an advantage, perhaps, in certain ways. According to the film, it's possible that people are more likely to believe her because she's black. On the other hand, her parents are zillionaires who apparently funded a whole lot of the buildings that are visible on the campus. Shows he's not really exactly all that low on the social scale, it turns out, after all. And then poor Hank, well, my gosh, he may, in fact, have a checkered past himself. Anyway, all of these things are not fully spelled out, are not fully addressed. And I think that's an unfortunate thing about the movie. So, After the Hunt. Yeah, as the title suggests, it's about people hunting for you. It's very much about what might be called cancel culture, although nobody exactly gets canceled. And it's very much about these kinds of very, very, to repeat a phrase, hot button issues that are going on nowadays. After the Hunt is fascinating to watch. It's beautifully acted by Julia Roberts and others. But I have to say, I wish it didn't hedge its bets so much. I wish it were more forthright and really put things on the line more, took more risks of its own. So it's a risky movie, an edgy movie, but an edgy movie that hedges too many bets. Good movie, not a great movie. And finally, I would like to talk, I don't usually do this, about a TV miniseries. It's streaming right now, just because it's really good and because it's about a filmmaker I totally admire. And it is about Martin Scorsese. And it is called Mr. Scorsese. Not a very catchy title, I admit, but there it is. And this is a movie that has Scorsese very much as a talking head on the screen for a long, long time. He's very much the center of this movie. And by the way, the movie was made, or the miniseries was made by Rebecca Miller, but it adds up basically to about a four-hour movie. It was originally planned to be a two-hour documentary, and it ended up being a five-part, approximately four-hour-long TV documentary, and it's well worth watching. So Martin Scorsese came along in the 1970s as a filmmaker. As a child, as a little kid, he was sick with asthma, and therefore he had to stay indoors for a lot of his childhood, and he watched television, and he watched movies on television, and his parents would take him to movies, and he got really infatuated with movies, and as he himself has said on many occasions, movies are his life. So he became a filmmaker, and he became an independent filmmaker. He made very, very edgy independent movies, unlike what anybody else was doing on the scene, movies like Who's That Knocking at My Door, Mean Streets. Later on, he made masterpieces like Taxi Driver. He made Goodfellas. He made Casino. And he made different kinds of movies, too, like The Age of Innocence, a very 19th-century drama, and Kundun, about Buddhism. So he made all different kinds of movies, and he's still on the scene, by the way. He's still working, even though he's well up into his 80s by now. And this movie traces his entire career. It talks about his childhood. It has him talking about his childhood, has people who knew him way back when, and how he got infatuated with movies, then how he went up to New York University, where he studied filmmaking and got to make his first student films and showed real, real talent right from the beginning, and then how he became an independent movie maker. And it also shows how he tried a few times to become more of a Hollywood movie maker without ever quite succeeding in breaking in. And it was partly because the movies he was making, the independent films, were so different from what most other people were doing, but it was also because he just didn't feel comfortable. He didn't feel comfortable on the Hollywood scene. So for those two reasons, he's always remained really almost entirely an independent, working outside the Hollywood system. The movie talks about some of the great failures of his career. New York, New York, an extremely ambitious movie, a musical film with Robert De Niro and Liza Minnelli and all kinds of wonderful things going for it. I think it's quite a terrific movie, but it was a commercial failure, and Hollywood distrusted Scorsese more than ever after he made that. Then The Last Temptation of Christ, a movie made out of Scorsese's own deeply rooted Christian religious convictions, but it was taken as an anti-religious movie by many people, and it generated tremendous controversy. And above all, it was not commercially successful. So now Hollywood, again, was distrusting him all the more. So it deals with all these things, and it also shows the great triumphs of his career. When he made movies like, for example, Goodfellas, it really became very, very big hits. And it covers a little bit of his documentary-making career. He made documentaries about some of the Beatles and about Bob Dylan and so forth. So that's also in the film. But mainly, it deals with his work as a maker of fiction films, largely gangster movies of various kinds. But they're not just gangster movies. There's always a really deep human dimension to them. And it talks a lot about his style. And that, to me, is Scorsese's greatest strength. He is one of the greatest film stylists who ever lived. And he is still very much around, and I have been calling him for years the greatest living American filmmaker, and I still believe he is that. So this movie is a very, very personal look at Scorsese, especially the first three episodes, where you have really a lot of people in his family and his close friends talking about him and discussing what he's like as a person. And he went through terrible periods of being addicted to cocaine, of being having terrible depression, but he came out of those things and was able to keep his career going. And again, his career is still going to this day. So Mr. Scorsese, a streaming TV miniseries, basically a 4 or 5 hour documentary about one of the greatest of all filmmakers, I heartily recommend it. Mr. Scorsese is a really good picture. So that is my somewhat cinematic story this week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films Blue Moon, After the Hunt, and Mr. Scorsese.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.